We're doing Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer. We're up to the 38th chapter. And Eshkol edition, it's page Kuf Lamites, the 38th chapter. In the Zichron Aaron edition, it's page Shin Lamed Dalid. But it's the 38th chapter. We just made a little bit of headway. We learned about how Shechem abducted Dina and took her forcibly, and then she was pregnant, and she had a child named Osnas that was sent down to Egypt. And Michal, the angel, took her down to Egypt to the house of Potiphera, because she was still going to be Yosef's wife. Vaita ishto shel Potiphera akara vegidela ota kevat. And Potiphar's wife was barren, so she brought up this girl as though she was her own daughter. Now, you have to understand what went on here. Potiphar is married to his wife, right? And they're married for a while now, and they can't have kids. So what does Potiphar's wife think? Something wrong with my husband. What does the Medrash tell us? There was something wrong with her. But she was very confident that there's nothing wrong with her, there's something wrong with her husband. So that's why when Yosef comes to town, she says, here's my chance. Because she's sure that she could have kids. It's only Potiphar that's the problem. The Medrash, in passing, is giving us a little bit of behind the scenes that she was the one that was barren. She was the one with the fertility issue. So she brought up Osnas as though she was her own daughter. And when Yosef came down to Mitzrayim, he married her. And last time we discussed the whole Medrash, how Yosef met up with her. Shneimar, as the pasuk says, "Veitenot osnat bat Potiphera koinon leisha." Paro gave Yosef Osnas, the daughter of Potiphera. She wasn't really their daughter; she was their adopted daughter. As we find throughout the Tanakh, that someone's adopted child is called their child. Just as Serach, the daughter of Asher, was not really his daughter, was his adopted daughter. It was his stepdaughter; she was his wife's daughter. But an adopted child is called a person's child. Shimon and Levi, kinu kinagzola laznut. Shimon and Levi, they were very zealous against znus. Shneimar, as the pasuk says, achizonai aset achotenu. Will he make our sister like a prostitute? They were zealous against prostitution, and that's why they went out and killed out the whole city of Shechem. Velachu ishchabu ve'agut kol anshei Shechem. Each one took his sword. They went into the city of Shechem, killed out all the men. Ucheshama Yaakov nitirei arbe meod. When Yaakov heard this, he got very scared, and that's what he told the brothers. What's wrong with you? You destroyed me. And he cursed their anger. Yaakov got very scared. He's scared of the kings all around, as the Medrash will explain. He's very scared, and that's why he spoke harshly to them. Shamar, because what Yaakov thought was, Achshav yetzu kol amei haaretz ve'yasvu alai ve'yarguni. The nations of the land will now get together. You know, these people of Shechem, they must have been part of the UN or NATO or some kind of other organization, the New Middle East. And if we fought one of them, so in accord with their peace treaty, so all the other nations will get together and they'll pounce on us. So Yaakov was concerned. Our sages say that Yaakov was concerned, and he actually had to get ready for war. And according to, there's a book called Sefer HaYoshar. That's unclear where it comes from, but it's been around. It's a Machlokas Rishonim, whether it's a bona fide Medrash or not. And in that book records there was a massive war after this. Yaakov and his sons did have to fight a war. All the nations got together and said, oh, you guys think you're going to take over the land of Israel, so we're going to nip it at the bud. We're not going to let you get away with destroying the city of Shechem. And the Medrash, that book, Sefer HaYoshar, records a whole list of wars that happened here. Goes into great details into the wars that happened here. Other Midrashim say that when the nations wanted to come to war, Yaakov stood at the gate with his armor, and they saw Yaakov and they ran. Pashup Shat, and the way Rashi explains, is that it was a miracle, and that's what the Midrash here is about to say. Hitchil mekalel rogzam shel banav. So Yaakov started cursing their anger, the anger of his children. Shenemar, as the verse says, Arur apam ki az. Yaakov curses their anger. He says it's brazen. Ve'od shekilel et charmam b'lashon yevanit. And he also cursed their sword in Greek. Shenemar, the pasuk says, this is where we left off, Klei chamas mecheiroteihem sheyevanim korim lecherev macher. In Greek, right? Okay. In Greek, you call a sword a macher. And that's validated in modern Greek as well. We're lucky we're cosmopolitan here in Machon Meir. We have people from all over the world. Baruch Hashem. Shamu kol malchei ha'aretz v'nityar'u me'od. The nations of the land heard, they got very scared. Amru im shnei bnei Yaakov asu ha'davar hazeh. They said to themselves, if two kids could do this, im yasfu chulam, yicholim lachiv tolam. If they get together, they could destroy all of us. And v'nafal pachdo shel ha'kadosh baruch hu aleihim. And God's fear settled in on the nations all around. Meaning on the one hand, there's always a logical representation to God's interference in the world. If a nation attacks Israel and God wants that nation destroyed, so you could call it a President Bush that sends his army and destroys them. But if you look at it from afar, you say, gee, what happened here? You have Hussein, who's sending scuds to Israel, and the United States wags its finger at Israel and says, don't you do a thing. We're taking care of this. And they run in and they mow off his all his forces. And if you look at it and you say, wait a second, what's going on here? The United States is fighting a war and they're shooting scuds at us and they tell us, don't you get involved. We're going to destroy Saddam Hussein and you guys don't do a thing. Okay. You know. So every time you see something that's unusual, it has a natural representation in the world, and then it has the behind the scenes, that what God was planning. So the Midrash expresses both. The Midrash says the nations all around the earth, the nations around there in the Middle East, in the Mediterranean, they were saying, we have to stand up to this. And then they said, wait a second, if two kids could do this, imagine what they could do together if they all unite. Yeah, we did the math last time, yeah. But the Midrash says that in truth, this was God placing his fear in their heart. Shnemal, as the Pasuk explicitly says, Vayi chitat Elokim, the fear of God was on the nations all around them. Ve'lakach Yaakov banav u'bnei vanav v'nashav, and Yaakov took his children and grandchildren and wives, v'alach l'kiryat arba etzel Yitzhak aviv. He went to his father in Kiryat Arba, u'matza sham et Esav et nashav yoshvim bo'ol Yitzhak, and he comes to the tent, and he finds Esav and his wives and his kids sitting in the tent. If we could just ask guys to put their stuff on silent. It's outside. Okay. So he finds that Esav and his wives are there with Yitzchak. And the truth is that Esav did keep it on the aim all the years that Yaakov didn't. Who was taking care of Yitzchak, who was blind and home? Esav was. And this served as a merit for Esav for years to come. So Yaakov comes to Yitzchak, v'nata aholo chutzalo, and Yaakov set up his tent outside. Yaakov is camped next to Yitzchak. Esav and his wives are in the tent, and Yaakov and his family is outside nearby. But he didn't really go live with his father, enter and become one big camp together. V'ra'a Yitzchak et Yaakov, and Yitzchak saw Yaakov et nashav et panav et benotav et kol ha'sholo, and his sons and daughters and everything he owned. And when Yitzchak saw that, v'samach belibo me'od, he was very happy. You have to know that that's one of the things our parents suffer when we make aliyah. That they don't get to see their kids and grandchildren and all that. So if you could, you get on a Skype and you show them the kids. You talk to them. My mother reads bedtime stories to my kids with a book before they go to sleep. So they call on Skype once a week or whatever, whenever it works, and they see the book. So you could do that today. We live in a day and age that for free you could talk across the Atlantic. It's one of the nachas that parents can have. So this is assuming, as we've discussed many times, that the parents won't influence the kids badly. But if you can make it work, it's a joy to the parents. Even Yitzchak, the Midrash describes that when he sees Yaakov and his wives and his kids, that gives him happiness. The Pasuk describes it, Gil Yagil Avit Tzadik. The father of the Tzadik is happy. It gives him happiness to see how his son is successful. And this is part of the description of Yitzchak, that it says when Yitzchak died, it said Yitzchak died of satiated days. What does it mean, satiated days? He was satiated. He had his nachas. He saw his children and grandchildren. He saw them successful. Now that's a way to go. You see the future generation succeeding. Ve'alav ha'katuv omer, and about Yitzchak, the Pasuk says, Urei vanim levanecha shalom al Yisrael. You see peace. You see your sons having grandchildren. you see your sons having sons and peace on Israel. So the Gemara is learning, who is Israel? Israel is Yaakov. It's talking about Yitzchak, who saw peace on Israel, peace on his son, Yaakov. Rabbi Levi Omer, Rabbi Levi says, Bishat HaSifato Shel Yitzchak, at the time that Yitzchak passed away, Hiniach Et Mikneo Vet Kineno Vet Kol Sholo Lishnei Banav. He left all his wealth, his cattle, he left everything to his two sons. Lefichach Gamlu Lo Chesed Shnehem. That's why they both did kindness with him. Why do you think Esav came to the funeral? Because he knew he had some of the inheritance to get. Shneimal, the pasuk says, "Vayikburu oto Esav veYaakov banav." Esav and Yaakov, his sons, buried him. Amar Esav liYaakov. So Esav turns to Yaakov after the funeral and he says, "Now it's time to talk money. Nachlok kol mashiniach lanu abba lishnei chalakim. Let's divide everything that Dad left us into two. We'll divide everything in two. Va'ani borer shani bechor." And I get to choose because I'm the firstborn. Now technically, Yaakov could tell him, go jump in a lake. You sold me your double portion. You sold me your rights to the firstborn. Why should you choose? I'm the firstborn. You sold me those rights. But Yaakov doesn't do that. And that's part of the wisdom. Sometimes in negotiations, you have to ignore what the other side is doing. You have to remember what your goal is. The truth is not always what's important. Maybe you could prove the other side wrong on 10 fronts. But that's not necessarily the goal. Sometimes you could let the other side live with their lies. For the time being, at least. It'll always be a negotiating point if you need to bring it up later. But you can let them live with their lies if you could get what you want out of it. And Yaakov knows what he wants out of this negotiation. So Yaakov doesn't make a point of that yet. He could always pull it out later. But you realize the advantage of doing it that way. If you bring it up now, we get stuck on that point now and we're starting on bad terms. But maybe without bringing it up, I'll get what I want. So then I don't need to put him to point out the truth to him. And if I don't get what I want without it, I could always use that as part of the bargaining tactic. I could always come back and say, hey, wait a second, the truth is that I deserve a double portion, you deserve a third, and I get to choose because I'm the firstborn. So Yaakov approaches this smartly, and Yaakov says to himself, Amar Yaakov, harasha hazeh lo mile eino min haosher. This wicked one, he's never happy. He's got millions. And he's still a fanatic for getting more wealth. Shneimar, as the pasuk says, Gameino lo tis ba'osher. His eye is never satiated with wealth. And notice that this goes hand in hand with being wicked. When a person always wants more and more. Ne'asa Yaakov, chilek b'shnei chalakim, kol ma she'niach aviv chalek echad, ve'eteretz Yisrael chalek echad. Yaakov said, okay, here's the deal. He takes all the wealth, puts it all on one side. Takes the future right to the land of Israel, puts it on another side. Now the future right to the land of Israel, that's another 400 years down the road. So Esav sees all the wealth. Me'asa Esav. So Esav figures, what am I going to do? He's not sure which way to go. This Yaakov's a smart man. So what does he do? He goes one generation up to his uncle. Halach etzel Yishmael lamidbar limalech bo. He went out to Yishmael to the desert and asked him for counsel. What should I do? Shneimar, the pasuk says, Ve'yelech Esav li Yishmael. Esav went to Yishmael and asked him for counsel. Now, here we have to work out, this story must have happened earlier, before Yitzchak died, they must have had this conversation, because Yishmael technically died a long time before Yitzchak did. So it didn't happen the way the Medrash is writing it. The Medrash is telling us that this happened, that Yaakov and Esav had a discussion how they're going to divide the inheritance, and Esav took counsel with Yishmael. But technically Yishmael wasn't around after Yitzchak died. So it didn't happen the way the Midrash is saying it exactly. Amar Yishmael Esav, Yishmael said to Esav, Hey Mori v'Knani az baretz. What are you worried about? Who's living here now? The Mori, the Knani, he doesn't have anything now. V'Yaakov potech l'reshtet haaretz. So Yaakov is confident that the time will come when he will inherit the land. Elatol mashiniach avicha ben Yaakov muma. You don't worry. You take what your father left behind. You'll be wealthy now and Yaakov will have nothing. So Esav took all the wealth that Yitzchak left behind, and he left Yaakov the land of Israel, and the one part of the land of Israel that they legally owned at that time, which was the Me'oras HaMachpelah, that Yaakov alone will get buried there. And Esav packs his bags and leaves. And they wrote a deed, an eternal deed between them. Amar Yaakov leEsav, lech me'eretz achuzati me'eretz Kenan. So Yaakov tells Esav, now, my dear brother, it's time for you to leave. This is going to be my land. Go settle down somewhere else. You agreed I'm going to have this land.
So Esav stuck to the deal. V'lakach Esav et nashav et kol ashalo. Esav took his wives and everything he owned. Shneimaz, the pasuk says, v'yelech el'eretz mipnei Yaakov achiv.
He traveled out to the territory that he settled, the mountains of Seir, and he left the space for Yaakov, his brother.
Uvischar shepina et kol kelav b'shvil Yaakov achiv.
And in the merit, as a reward, as wages for the fact that he cleared the way for Yaakov, even though technically that's what he should have done, but he didn't need to do it completely. You know, it's like when you leave an apartment, you come back 15 times, I forgot this pot, I forgot that pan, you know, and I left things in the attic, and I forget just that closet. You shouldn't do that, it's not nice. Esav didn't do that. When Esav cleared the land, it said, the Medrash stresses, he took all his belongings. He didn't leave anything behind where he'd have to come back and knock and just say, you know, or he'd have an excuse to keep coming back. He didn't. He, on this point, he was fair, and that's why he got wages for that. God gave him 100 cities from Seir all the way to Magdiel. Shnemaz, the pasuk says, Aluf Magdiel, Aluf Irim, Iram, Zeromi, that's Rome that ultimately was theirs. Az Yashav Yaakov Betach Veshanan, Beertz Kenan, Beertz Mulato, Beertz Megure Aviv. And then Yaakov settled down peacefully in the land of Canaan, the land he was born in, the land his father lived in. These are all indications of the tranquility he lived in. And it was a fulfillment of the original prophecy, where God said, when God was on top of the ladder, God said, I'll bring you back to the land you were born in, to the land of your father. I'll bring you back to these states of tranquility, and he got it. Shneimaz, the pasuk says, Vayeshev Yaakov ve'otz migurei aviv. Yaakov settled down in the land that his father had lived in. Rabbi Yishmael omer, kol ben zoken chaviv la'aviv. And now we begin the story of Yosef. You guys want to continue now, or you want to... Yeah? Okay, Rabbi Yishmael omer. So now, we finished the story, Yitzchak passed away, we finished the story of Shechem and Dinah and Yosef and Osnas and Levi and Shimon and the war, and Yitzchak passed away and Yaakov's in peace and everything's okay. So if everything's okay, what has to happen? Action, right? Life isn't about everything being peaceful. It doesn't work that way. You have little islands of tranquility in between seas of troubles. That's a description of life. Life is about dealing with the sea of troubles. And every so often you have a little island of tranquility in between the seas. But life is about contending with the difficulties. Life isn't about peace and quiet. Is that okay, Yehuda?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Okay. You don't seem happy with what I'm saying. I wasn't happy with what I'm saying once either. But then I learned that it's a positive thing. We were put down here on earth to grow. So it's not the end of the world. I once learned with the guys here the Medrash that says, there's a Medrash Tanchuma that says, She'ena simcha mamtenet la'adam. Happiness doesn't wait for you in life. Even when you have happy periods, you have to know that they're going to be followed by troubled periods. And the Medrash goes through all of history in the Torah and shows you how no one, the most righteous people, never had an extended period of time when things were happy. And the guys got very upset at this Medrash. I said, what a sad medrash. That's what life is all about. You're always dealing with difficulties. So the truth is, yes, it doesn't mean we can't be happy. But it means that the external circumstances are going to be challenging. Life is about contending with the challenges. I often tell guys, when people are here in the gear process, so they spend a year or two contending with a specific difficulty. That's all they want to pass in life. And then when they finish it, it's like, oh, I made it. So usually when we have a party and if I'm asked to speak, one of the points I'll always say is, just be ready. It's just starting. You finish with one hardship, believe me, life is about challenges. Life is not about sitting down and now, I made it. Okay, now it's going to be peaceful. Oh no. It's about what's the next challenge. But that's what life's about. We grow from our challenges. Rabbi Yishmael omer, so now Yaakov, so to speak, has it made. Things are peaceful. Esav left. He has the land, he has the family, there's no wars. So we know the big trouble is about to hit Yaakov. 22 years of trouble with his prized son Yosef being missing. Can you imagine that? Did you ever think that Yaakov was a parent of a kidnapped son for 22 years? Not only Gilad Shalit's parents are living with a son out there somewhere, who knows what. Yaakov Avinu lived like that for 22 years. Sometimes we have to stop and take a realistic view at what our forefathers underwent, and suddenly we see that there are very few hardships that we will undergo in this life that our forefathers did not undergo. We just have to look at it that way. In the Tanakh, it goes from one pasuk to the next. 22 years passed, 1,000 years passed. Okay, but that's real time. Yaakov Avinu spent 22 years in suffering, not knowing what's happening with his son. So now we're beginning that story. Rabbi Ishmael Omer.
Can we just get them to keep quiet outside of it? It's like competing.
I'll take care of it.
We waited for you, boys. Rabbi Ishmael Omer. Rabbi Ishmael said, "Kol ben zoken chaviv laviv." Ordinarily, a child that a person has when he's an older man, so that child he is more fond of. You have more patience for the kids when you're an old man. Everything's cute. When you're younger, then get your pants on. You have less patience. Shneimal, the pasuk says, "V'Yisrael avit Yosef mikol banav ki ben zkunim mulo." Yaakov loved Yosef because he was born when Yaakov was already an older man. V'chiben zkunim haya Yosef. Wait a second. Was Yosef the boy that was born when Yaakov was an old man? V'lo Binyamin haya ben zkunim. The one who was born when Yaakov was really old was Binyamin. The youngest son was Benjamin. Right, Benjamin? Yeah? He should have been the prize son. So, what's going on here? El al yedei sherabin nevuah shua atid limloch. But because Yaakov saw in prophecy that Yosef was still going to be king. Is he talking about king of Egypt? Is he talking about Melech HaMashiach? I don't know. Lefichach haya ohev oto mikol banav. That's why he loved him from all his sons. Vekine'u oto. And they were jealous of Yosef. Kina gdola. A great jealousy. So the jealousy was great, and so too the desire for vengeance was great. Shneimar, the pasuk says, Ve'iru echav ki oto ahav avihem. The brothers saw that their father loved him more than the rest of them, and so they hated him. Ve'od, and furthermore, shorah oto b'chalmo shatid limloch, ve'gid l'aviv. Yosef saw in a dream he's going to be king, so he goes and he tells his dad, I had a dream, I'm going to be king. Ve'osifu lo kina al kina, so that just made things worse. They were even more jealous. Shneimal's the pasuk says, ve'yosifu od sinoto. They hated him even more. Shera'a b'nei filakshe aviv ochlin b'sar aliyot kvasim kshen chayim. What happened was, he came back to his father, and he had seen his brothers, the sons of the Pilagshim, the sons of Bila and Zilpah, and he saw that they were eating flesh from the young rams while they were still alive. So here there's a discussion, what's going on here? The commentaries discuss were they really eating live food? So there are different midrashim as to what the circumstances were, why it was halachically permissible, and that Yosef missaw what they were doing wrong. He was quick to judge them. He thought they were eating meat that was not yet dead, which is one of the Noahide laws. So he went back to his father and said, spoke badly about them. So that's another reason. Shneimal's, the pasuk says, "V'lo echalu daberol l'shalom." They couldn't speak to him peacefully. Until then, they were jealous. They hated him. They could talk, but the second he started speaking badly about them to the father, that's when it ended. At that point, they said, "If you're talking badly about us, we can't talk to you." Now the brothers go out to watch the sheep. Amar Yaakov liYosef, Yosef ni. Yaakov tells Yosef, it's been some time now that I haven't heard how your brothers are doing or how the sheep is doing, so I'm concerned. Shneimal, the pasuk says, Yaakov tells Yosef, I want you to go out and see how your brothers are doing and how the sheep is doing. And Yosef was going and he was getting lost along the way. So he's looking, and he's getting lost. Ufagabo Gabriel Lamalach. And the angel Gabriel bumped into him. It doesn't say Yosef bumped into the angel. It says the angel bumped into him. Shnemar, the pasuk says, the man found him. Ordinarily, when you're getting lost and you bump into someone, the description is, I was getting lost and then I bumped into someone who told me how to go. The pasuk purposely words it a different way. Yosef was getting lost and a man found him getting lost. What was the man doing finding him? That's the angel that was sent to find him. And we find the term Ish refers to Gabriel the angel in the book of Daniel. So, the man meets up with Yosef. And it's a weird conversation. It says, so the man says, what you looking for? So Yosef says, I'm looking for my brothers. Do you know where they are? Maybe the man should ask him, and who are you? And who are your brothers? And how should I know where they are? So it's a very weird conversation. But according to our tradition, this was an angel he bumped into. According to our tradition, the conversation actually makes sense. Amalu matam makesh. So if it's the angel that shows up, so he asks him, what are you looking for? The simple reason, the simple reading is, what are you looking for? And he answers, I'm looking for my brothers. The deeper meaning is that the angel is asking him, what do you seek in life? What do you want to accomplish? And on that, the question is, did Yosef answer him or not? When Yosef answered him, I'm looking for my brothers, was he telling him the simple meaning, I'm looking for the people who are my brothers? Or was he telling him the deeper meaning, where the word ach means united, and he was saying, I'm looking for my brothership. I'm looking for my connection with my brothers. When Yosef answers him and says, Etachai Anochi Mevakesh, Rashi automatically says, the angel answered him and says, they left that. Rashi says, what does it mean they left that? That the angel was telling him, they're not thinking any brotherly love towards you. If that's what you're looking for, you're barking up the wrong tree. And according to Rashi, the conversation was on two levels. Meaning, we read the conversation, he asks him what you're looking for. He says, I'm looking for my brothers. He says, they left here. They left that. I heard them saying they're going to Dotan. Rashi says the conversation was on a totally different level. He's on his way to his brothers, and the angel comes and says, what are you looking for? He knows he's looking for the brothers. He's asking, what are you looking for with your brothers? You looking to speak badly about them again? What do you want with your brothers? And Yosef says, no, what I want with my brothers is my brothers. I want to connect with them. And the angel says, no, but they're not ready for that. They're ready to kill you. And Yosef continues to pursue them. Totally different picture of Yosef meeting up with his brothers, and they tear the clothing off of him. So the angel meets up with him and he says, I'm looking for my brothers. Holicho etzelechav. Scary words in the Medrash. Medrash says the angel walked him over to his brothers. The pasuk says, Vayelech Yosef achar etzav echav eimtzem bedotan. Yosef went after his brothers and found them in Dothan. It should have said, Vayelech Yosef el echav. He went to his brothers. It doesn't say that. It says he went achar echav, after his brothers. It's alluding that Vayelech Yosef, Yosef just started walking, and a moment later, achar echav, he found himself just behind his brothers, because he was with an angel. And the angel was there to ensure they meet up. We look at the story of Yosef and his brothers, and in a second we will see that that's a sin, that's a stain on our record for a long time. And yet, it's a stain that God set us up for. God wanted this to happen in a certain sense. God didn't want the brothers to sin, but God did want us to end up in Egypt in this way. So, he goes, the angel brings him to his brothers. The brothers see him, they want to kill him. Shnemar, the pasuk says, they saw him from a distance, and we know the continuation. They said, there's the dreamer, let's kill him, we'll see what will be with his dreams.
And Reuven says, "Amar lehem Reuven, al tishpechu dam." Reuven says, "Don't spill blood." So the Medrash says, a different Medrash says, that when they saw him from afar, they started saying, "Let's shoot him with a bow and arrow." And then they said, "No, don't do that." And then they said, "Let's send wild dogs; they'll tear him to pieces." And then that didn't work. He's continuing to come; the dogs don't touch him. So they said, "Okay, we'll kill him when he gets here." So Reuven said, "No, don't shoot the arrow." Reuven said, "Don't kill him." There's a lot to be discussed here. The Talmud discusses what happens if a person pushes someone else into the river. People could usually climb out of the river. That guy doesn't make it out of the river. He drowns. So the Talmud says that being that people can usually climb out of the river, that's not first degree murder. You can't kill him over that. Maybe we'll take care of him a different way. But technically, in court, that's not first-degree murder. Other people could have climbed out of the river. He caused his death. The Talmud says, if he takes his head and holds it under the water, that's first-degree murder. Talmud says, machlokas, what happens if he takes a snake, puts his mouth on him, and the snake bites him? So it's a machlokas in the Talmud. How does a snake bite? Is the venom injected directly, or is it a two-stage process? Meaning, when he put down the snake's head on the person, do we say that putting down on the head was a one-step process that killed him, that shot the venom into him? Or does a snake do it in two processes? He bites and then shoots the venom inside. So all he did was the bite and then the snake threw the venom inside. Is it first degree or second degree? How do we view a snake's biting? Again, if it's second degree, we might kill him also, but then we can't do it through the regular legal processes. Legally, you can't give him the death penalty. So the brothers initially wanted to kill Yosef second degree. They said, "Let's let the wild dogs at him. We don't have to kill him." And then they said, that didn't work. The wild dogs didn't kill him. So when he comes here, we'll kill him. And Reuven says, "No, don't do it first degree." Reuven says, "Leave him in the pit to die. Leave him in the pit." Reuven's thinking, "I'll save him." But Reuven's also saying, "Let's not spill his blood directly." Amar lehem Reuven, al tishpechu dam. Reuven said to them, "Don't spill blood. Ashlichu oto lebor hazeh. Throw him into the pit, asher b'midbar, that's out here in the desert. The Amud Sham, he'll die over there. What do you guys care? Don't kill him directly." Reuven said, "Don't be murderers. If he dies in the pit, it's different." Reuven, the pasuk says, Reuven was. We'll see in a second. Reuven figured, come nighttime, I'll pull him out and I'll take him home. Veshamu lo echav velakhut Yosef ishlichu oto labo. The brothers listened to him. And they threw him into the pit. And here the Torah skips a part of the story. When we reach two parshios later, when the brothers are standing before Yosef, and Yosef is making believe he's someone else, and they don't recognize him, and they're having a hard time. So then in the middle of the hard time, the brothers say to themselves, "This is all because of what we did to Yosef." And then Reuven says, "Didn't I tell you guys don't hurt him? Didn't I tell you listen to him and you guys weren't willing to listen? The poor kid was wailing before us and none of you were willing to listen, and now we're getting paid back for that." That part of the story, the Torah does us the favor of omitting. The Torah doesn't tell us when it happened. You know, this could be a rated R movie. The Torah would go into the details of Yosef wailing and they're stripping him and he's crying, "Don't do this to me," and they throw him into the pit, and then these filthy people are taking him down to be sold for prostitution. You know, if the Torah went to all those details, we'd have a very vicious story on our hands. So the Torah does us a favor. The Torah writes it in code. When you read it at first glance, you don't see what's really happening. When you put the pieces together, suddenly you see this is a pretty terrible story. So the brothers listen to Reuven, and they throw him into the pit. They listen to him, and they don't kill him. Masa Reuven. So what does Reuven do? Alach v'yashav lo be'echad min ha'arim. He went to sit on one of the mountaintops. Everyone figured he's still doing his tshuva. He's focused on the service of Hashem. That's why he went out. He's boldudus. And he figures, come nighttime, I'll sneak down and I'll pull Yosef out and send him back home. L'red balayla ula alot et Yosef min abo. He'll come down at night and pull Yosef out of the pit. B'tisha achav ayu yushvim b'makom echad. And his nine brothers sat down in a different place. They sat down and they were having a feast. The pasuk describes that they sat down
in a way of having a big meal. They weren't just sitting down to eat lunch. They were sitting down to party. Good riddance. Okay, let's sit down and eat. The Talmud says there are different ways of eating, and they have halachic implications. There's a way that you sit down and you have a snack. Then there's a way that you settle down to have a meal. That's what they were doing. They were all in agreement. They all agreed this was the right thing to do. Which has to make us wonder. Nine righteous people, and there are forefathers, you know, we are descendants of them. Tribe of Levi, even the Kohanim, everyone comes from them. They all came to the conclusion that this was the right thing to do. On the one hand, we know the Prophet, and the Medrash is going to quote that, the Prophet says it was wrong. But on the other hand, how'd they do that? Yeah.
These sort of things happened in previous generations. I mean, Ishmael was somewhat abandoned, right? And Esav, you said, was kicked out of Eretz Israel. So I think they're thinking the same thing. This that Yosef is not going to inherit them. So they might as well be getting him out before he causes revenge.
It's a very nice chat what you're saying. Some of the Rishonim say that. Some of the Rishonim say what you're saying. I don't remember if it's the Ibn Ezra or the Sephorno. Some of the Rishonim say that they looked at their predecessors and they said every family had one kid that was not really a part of the dynasty of Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. So, right? In one family it was Ishmael, one family it's Esav. So in our family it's Yosef, yeah. There is such an opinion. Okay. That's one possible answer. We have to realize that we're throwing the book at them, right? We're describing all that they did wrong. There is another side to the coin, which is their side, and even though we're not going into details of what their side of it was, it seems like their side was a pretty strong side, because in certain respects, God joined their side. You see that God sends the angel Michael, or Gavriel. God sends Gavriel to make sure that this happens. And we'll see in a second that when they make a pact that no one's telling the father, what happened? God agrees with that too. So the Ishmaelim passed by and they said, okay, let's sell him to the Ishmaelim. And they'll take him out to the other end of the desert and we won't hear from him again. He won't make any troubles. And Yaakov, his father, won't hear from him again. And good riddance. So Yaakov will think he died and will be able to continue with life. They sold him to the Ishmaelim for 20 silver coins. Each one got two coins. They all wanted to get new shoes. As the pasuk describes, they sold the tzaddik for silver. They sold him for a pair of shoes. We'll make a pact that no one's allowed to reveal the story to our father Jacob unless we all agree. Yehuda said, you can't make a pact without 10. And you don't have Reuven here. You're missing one. So what they do, they said, God, you're number 10 in the count. You're joining us. And God agreed. God joined. Which also is an indication that the story is siding with the brethren a little bit here. So now comes nighttime. Reuven sneaks down from the mountain. He comes to the pit. Yosef. No answer. He's not there. So he comes back to the brothers and he said, I can't believe it. You guys killed him. Where is he? You killed him. How am I going to come back to that? So they told him what they had done and they told him the pact that they had made. So Reuven heard the pact and he had to be quiet. And God was also silent. He didn't tell Yitzchak what happened. And because of this pact, he did not tell Yaakov, even though the pasuk says, "Uchtiv bo magid v'rav Yaakov." Ordinarily, God told Yaakov whatever he wanted to know. And this God didn't tell him. Lefichach lo yeda Yaakov tadvar shnasal Yosef ve'amal tarof toraf Yosef. So Yaakov didn't know, and Yaakov assumed Yosef was dead. And we'll pick up here next time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Correct.